Welcome to the Omfit podcast.
Hello and welcome to this podcast. My name is Marcin Stepan. I'm the Managing Director of the Sovereign Debt Institute here at OMFIF. And I'm delighted to welcome Domenico Nardilli, the Treasurer at the Asian Infrastructure and Investment Bank. He is responsible for the investment of the bank's liquid assets, the capital markets operations, including payments and back office, and the asset and liability management. And today we'll be discussing the borrowing landscape for Asia. We'll reflect on the growing green, social, sustainable bond markets, and we'll take a look at some of the important developments that we've got coming up for 2022. Thank you, Domenico.
Marcin, thank you, and it's a pleasure to be invited on this podcast.
Wonderful. Well, let's kick off. We've had a very interesting start to the year. Can you talk us through a little bit more about your issuance programs and what is your aims for 2022?
Yes, in 2022, we continue to be engaged in placing AIIB on a stable foot among the most active and liquid MDB issuers. The bank is very young, so it's been around for only 6 years so far, and we and only started to issue in 2019 one single bond issuance. But since then, the issuance program has grown very significantly. Last year, we had a program that had been approved for up to $10 billion, and we raised $8.5 billion. And for this year, we have requested again, and our board has approved another $10 billion U.S. dollars. This is a higher figure than what we actually need for disbursements. But what we are also trying to do is to grow the treasury liquidity chest in order to be ready to tackle any unforeseen need. And we believe that that's the right strategy to equip AIIB to respond to any crisis.
That's very interesting. Obviously, we've had the threat of rising rates, certainly, in core currencies, and this has triggered a rush into bond markets. We have very interesting, challenging conditions, one would say. Do you see the value in pressing into markets to get ahead of hikes? And how are you thinking about the timing of some of these issuance programs? We can see, for example, some of the MDBs in Europe, for example, they've certainly been looking at front loading. Is this something that you're looking at as well?
Yeah, in a way, it can be said that we have acted similarly. So as I said, we raised more funds than we actually needed for disbursements in 2021 and also 2020. And there is no denying that those years are almost now in the past, in the rear mirror, in terms of being the years of protracted, very low interest rates, abundant liquidity. And so we, like all other peer institutions, we enjoyed a very, very strong demand from investors. So those have been a very favorable market. All the AAA rated issuance have been always received by investors, regardless of currencies, I would say, with a lot of interest. Liquidity conditions were very good. There was ample capital to be deployed on the part of investors, and lots of appetite for high quality from high quality investors. I would say that regulations also played a part. For example, we had a very strong demand from bank treasuries, for example, which was not typically historically a large investor category for our issuance activity, but regulations, they determined a very strong demand for so-called HQLA1 type of assets, and we were lucky to, as AIIB, to receive such designation in a number of jurisdictions globally. Not all of them, but a number of jurisdictions. We've done very good progress. And so we also enjoyed that particular additional grant.
And let's talk a little bit more about inflation. Obviously, we've seen corn inflation rising quite high, certainly in the Western Hemisphere. How are you looking at inflation from your perspective?
Well, we look at it certainly from two sides. One is the reflection on the for our issuance activities, and the other one, of course, is for our asset portfolio, our liquidity portfolio. I believe that in both for both sides there is considerable uncertainty in that's generated from the way that the market seems to be divided between two camps. Those who think that this inflation shock is here to stay, and it will determine a sustained and prolonged rise in interest rates, and also more probably a sharper one than it was previously thought. And this is summarized by all the observers on the pattern that will be followed by the Federal Reserve to increase rates. There are those who expect already a very significant increase in March already, rather than a mere 25 basis points, which seemed the consensus up to a few days or weeks ago. And then there is the camp of those who think that, yes, this is a shock. There is a strong component that's deriving from all the tensions in the global supply chain. But once the pandemic effect, and once again the global supply chain problems will be addressed, or I wouldn't say resolved, because it's going to take a long time, but they will diminish, the pressures on the inflation camp will subside. And I think this is still not resolved as a debate. There are strong views either end. This is creating a lot of uncertainty. And we are seeing the effects of it in the market. There is, you know, volatility definitely has increased. And so this, from the one hand, creates more execution risk on the issuance front, of course. So with volatility in the market, investors will, you know, legitimately be more nervous around the execution of deals. And of course, it creates a lot of challenges on the investment front for our asset portfolio. And as Treasury, for example, we do try to contribute to the bank's bottom line income by generating interest income. Of course, at the end of the day, we are a Treasury department, and so we don't want to take too much risk. And in this regard, of course, a raising rate environment is a threat and is a challenge for us.
And can you talk us through some of your strategies that you'd like to, you know, in terms of mitigating some of these challenges, and, you know, to what extent you need to raise larger volumes in, say, non-core currencies, or how do you manage and how do you plan the different sort of scenarios here?
Yeah, from the funding standpoint, from the issuance standpoint, we have been busy trying to diversify the portfolio and also the currencies that we issue. For sure, you know, being a large global MDB, we rely mainly on the global bond issuance. Yeah, this is an SEC registered program that provides the bulk of our funding, and we intend to continue to do so. So US dollar globals will continue to be the main component of our funding. Most likely we will issue two benchmarks every year. As the bank grows, potentially you might see three in the future. And so we intend to keep those as liquid as we can. That's basically the bedrock of our program. But over the past couple of years, we have been increasing presence in other markets as well, both public and private placements. On the public side, we've been launching more programs. For example, we launched the Kangaroo program, so we started to issue in Australian dollars, public public bonds, which have been met with very good demand. And similarly, sterling. Sterling also, over the past few years, have been again very, very active for FOB Supra, for the FOB Supra community. And we decided to enter the market, and we actually found a good way to generate funding in size publicly. And it's something that we intend to continue to do. We are also working on putting together the documentation to be able to issue under a MAPLE program, so in Canada domestically. And so this is something that we are now finalizing on the documentation front. And when we are ready, we may want to access that market. And then on the other hand, we've been developing our private placement program. And here I have to say that we were able to also make some very, very good progress. We, having issued our first ever private placements only in January 2020, we have already issued in a range of currencies. We at the moment, we only issue vanilla bonds. We don't have, you know, the structured programs that some of the more established peer institutions are used to issuing. We are still working on that, but so we are pretty limited in terms of structures. But nevertheless, we have already seen lots of demand in a variety of currencies, from Turkish lira to Mexican peso, Russian ruble, particularly, and this is nice because it's additive in terms of demand, particularly from the higher interest rates currencies. We see demand also coming from the private banking side. So this goes to a distribution channel that is completely separate to the demand that we have for our public bonds. And that's very interesting for us. And so we are already at a percentage of the overall funding, which is between 12 and 15% of the yearly funding, which is done through private placements, which is something that is already in line with very established peer organizations. And we are very happy with that. And that's a business that we intend to continue to develop over time.
Thank you. That's very interesting. I was reading about that it was last year that it was your sterling deal came through. And yes. Certainly very, very important in that regard. Obviously the work that AIIB has been doing in terms of trying to grow the domestic capital markets within Asia is certainly been very important. What would you say are some of your ambitions for 2022? How would you like to, we talked about the different currencies that you're looking into. Where would you like to be at the end of 2022 with the different sort of markets around?
Yes. Well, in 2022, what I would like to do is to continue to cement our presence also here domestically in China. After all, we are NMDB headquartered in China. And for us, you know, renminbi, the domestic panda bond market is also an important avenue for funding, because we do have, obviously, we do have demand in renminbi, and we have already issued a highly successful transaction in this market. And we do have a program documentation open, which we would like to use again. So that's definitely something that we want to continue to develop. The other important driver for 2022, something that I really wish we can be successful at developing, is to at least start our presence in the local currency markets. And so to see our first non-hard currency, so to speak, issuance in a local market. And this is something where we are doing a lot of work, both from our standpoint, you know, in terms of capital markets, but also with our colleagues on the operations department, to understand really the needs of our clients, the pipeline in projects that is developing where we can add value and where we think that it's feasible for the bank, for AIIB, to be able to service those loans through physical issuance domestically. So far, we have already started to have demand for loans in currencies other than US dollars, and we have serviced those through the synthetic currency markets. So basically, we've done cross-currency swaps. But because this business is here to stay, and I also think it really makes sense to couple, you know, the support of the Treasury for operations locally, also by issuing locally, because in this way we also help the local markets develop. I think it's something that for us is really a desirable objective, and I'm very, very much involved into trying to push for the bank developments in this regard.
Thank you. Let's change tack perhaps a little bit, and let's talk about the green, social, and sustainable space. Obviously, this is green bonds, social bonds, sustainable bonds, different label bonds are very much a critical instrument for supporting sustainable investments, mitigation, adaptation, resilience, certainly against climate change, or climate harming activities. And obviously, this bond market is growing very much. What's your outlook for the issuance for these labeled bonds?
Yes. Well, first of all, I should say that at AIIB, we have chosen a quite specific pattern whereby we decided very early to not put together thematic bond documentation, such as a separated green bond or other types of ESG-driven issuance. The reason for that is very simple, and it's in the novelty of the bank. The fact that the bank has been established very recently, and so we didn't have any legacy portfolio that was, so to speak, outside the ESG space. And secondly, because the world, because AIIB is a new bank, has been established very recently, the word sustainability is present in the articles of agreement of the bank. So the bank was created with sustainability at its core. And so the choice that we made was to basically create a framework for our issuance that puts the ESG wrapper, if you will, the ESG label around everything that we issue. So we created this sustainable development bond framework, which basically applies to everything, every fundraising that the bank does, and is reflected in the wording for the use of proceeds in our issuance programs. And so that's all we do when we raise money. So we wanted to try and convey to investors, and this is what we highlight when we speak to them, that in AIIB, you don't have to screen between bonds issued by AIIB. You just look at the issuer, and AIIB is a sustainable issuer. So that's the initiative that we put together in 2020 to underpin our issuance activity. And this year, in the first half of this year, we coupled that with the issuance of the first impact report from AIIB. So we put together a document which is a summary. I don't want to overplay it because it is information that you find in several other reports that the bank produces from an institutional standpoint. But we gathered all the ESG themed information in one publication, one place, to convey to investors in a simple language, in a summary language, a language that is easy to understand, and that talks about all the impact from the ESG point that the projects executed by the bank are bringing about. And so that's the strategy that we have chosen for the bank.
That's very interesting. There's always lots of talk around taxonomies because from what you're saying, you're funneling all the different information to one setting. What paradigms, what standards, or when it comes down to finding the right kind of data that you can provide to investors, do you find that some of the constraints are the lack of taxonomies or standards between countries to help screen and monitor the projects? To what extent is that a challenge here, and what are the ways forward?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting topic, an interesting question, so that we could talk for a long time. But in a nutshell, I think, like in all standards, the challenge starts when it becomes complicated to look at the rules, and there is a proliferation of rules and in different jurisdictions. So to say it in a different way, it is when there is no easy standard to understand. And this is something that we again try to tackle with the, when we put together the sustainable development bond framework, because we decided that we did not want to adhere to one or the other particular standard. We looked at something that is existing already, and it's the UN SDGs. And we made a clear reference to those, the sustainable development goals being put together by the United Nations, which are widely accepted, widely understood, and had been broadly communicated. And we said we want to anchor our program to those. And so it is not only environmental, but there is a set of different sustainable objectives, which we believe that the bank covers many of those. So what we did is we picked those SDGs that we think the articles of agreement of the bank, the statute of AIIB, caters more clearly and more closely. And so we adopted those as the rules that underpin our activity. There has been a lot of work, of course, done by other bodies, in particular ICMA, with the green bond principles. Now, recently, there has been a lot of talk around the decision of the EU to adopt a specific particular taxonomy. So when it comes to energy, the debate gets quite complicated. We at the bank, we have our own so-called ESF from the environmental and social standards. So it's called ESF, Environmental and Social Framework. That's what where we basically outline all the policies that we adhere to when it comes to ESG standards. And that's what we also refer to in our framework, in the Sustainable Development Bond framework. One thing, Martin, that I would add is that the debate, when it comes to the taxonomy conversation that's been triggered by the EU decision, I think for Asia, the discussion on energy in particular is critical, is key. Because Asia is a region where the energy needs are huge, of course, to continue to support the regional countries to develop. And so it is a particularly important conversation. We at the bank, made a decision through the commitment that was made by the president of the AIIB, Mr. Jin Lichun. He declared that the bank would not fund any program that is functional to coal. And this is already more than a year ago that he went public with this pledge and this commitment. And so we have adhered very clearly. So there was no doubt around that. And the bank has not financed any coal-related project. If you look at the debate that's been taking place around the EU decision on the taxonomy, I think natural gas will be another important discussion to be had. And of course, depending in which region and the development needs of particular countries, there will be, I'm sure, many different points of view. And I think it's a discussion that will continue over time.
Do you think there's, are you seeing a need either from an issuer side or an investor side that, or you, would you hope for a unified taxonomy in the foreseeable future? Or do you think do we have to have different jurisdictions have different needs?
Again, very important. I think certainly it would be hugely beneficial if there were a simple taxonomy to understand at all levels and in all jurisdictions. So that's for one. So not too many principles, you know, something that's clear and can be really, can function as a guide for issuers and investors alike. Because the moment you make it complicated so that it becomes the turf or only the practitioners, so to speak, I think it can lose effectiveness in a way. And so I think simplicity, clarity definitely is a key. In terms of differentiations by regions, I think that's a very sensible discussion to be had. Because as I said before, you know, you can't compare the needs of economies that are already beyond development and transition and are already mature, developed with plenty of access already underway to renewable sources for energy, and other regions who are behind in the process and might benefit from a period of transition from heavy fuels to other fuels that perhaps are not completely green, renewable, clean, but definitely, you know, less taxing on the environment. And again, this is a discussion that where I think we still don't have a common understanding at the policymaking level, and it will require a little bit more conversations to be agreed upon.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Domenico. Thank you for a great discussion, and we look forward to remaining in touch and continuing these important debates as we go on for the rest of the year.
Thanks very much, Marcin. Much appreciated speaking to you today. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.